Hey everyone, it's Matt Pelishek.
I'm Aaron Perlman.
And we are the afternoon
Joyride.
And of course, hosts of Considerate Joy. And we love movies. In fact, we could talk about them all day long, probably. That wouldn't be real thrilling for you. So we decided to bring on another guest today who we're really excited about.
Yeah, he's a YouTuber who actually reviews movies for a living and ranks them. His name is Sean Chandler. He has a show called Sean Chandler Talks About. And we dig into that, not just movies, but his personal life and how it relates to Jesus.
Sometimes movies and faith get all mixed up and people have some wild opinions about what's okay and what isn't. So we want to dive in to Hollywood, YouTube, and Jesus. And while we are a clean and family-friendly podcast, because we're talking movies, there will be some references to the types of content some films have. So keep that in mind if you have young ones listening.
It's Consider It Joy.
Consider it pure joy.
See if it sparks joy in you.
Because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance.
Welcome back. This is Consider It Joy. It's the official podcast of 88.3 Life FM in Bakersfield, California. Well, we like to talk about faith and music and where they intersect. But Aaron, we also are huge movie fans.
Oh, man, beyond belief. If there's something we talk about more so besides Christian music in between our show, it's always about movies. And that's why today we have YouTuber Sean Chandler, who's going to be joining us to talk a little bit about Hollywood, faith, and movies.
Yeah, Hollywood, YouTube, and Jesus are the three things that don't often get put together, right? And so we're going to dig into that because Sean is not only a YouTuber who, like us, has a love of movies. He's also spent many years working in ministry, has ministered to youth in his church, as well as speaking at youth events. Sean, man, we are excited to have you on with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I get asked to talk in places about movies all the time, and then I do all sorts of work where I talk about church stuff in churches, but not often do I get the two to merge together, so this is going to be a lot of fun.
I think that's one of the reasons we wanted to do it, because a good friend of ours who is actually also a pastor, and he's a big movie guy, used to work for Lucasfilm and stuff, and we talk a lot about the fact that he would almost have to draw lines between the two, because there was a lot of people in his church at one time that, like, they wouldn't be okay with the fact that, you know, he was doing artwork for some of these movies or some of them that he loved, whereas some of his movie friends weren't interested in the church side. And so, yeah, I think it's one of those things that at least not real commonly cross paths. But you know what? Let's start with the YouTube side of things, because I think if you were to ask a classroom full of sixth graders, there was a time where you said, what do you want to be? Like, the cool answer would have been rock star or movie star or something. But of course, now it's YouTuber.
Yep. Yeah, and influencer.
Yeah, influencer, yes. And like, here you are, you've done it, you're doing it. And so I had to look this up. There's over 31 million YouTube channels. On top of that, with the amount of subscribers you have, it puts you in the 0.4% of top YouTube creators. How did you even get to this point? Give us a little bit of the story of Sean Chandler Talks About.
Even a fun detail on all of that, as of about just 2 hours ago, I hit 250,000 subscribers, 250,000 subscribers.
Wow.
And I was doing a live stream. And I knew I was approaching. I was, let me check this real quick. So it's live on this stream being like, oh, wow, I finally did it. This is crazy, crazy, crazy. And like you said, where did it all start? Like everyone else, the humblest of beginnings. I was a high schooler in the late 90s that was really into Jackie Chan movies. So I started a Jackie Chan fan webpage. And this was, you know, members.aol.com era of the internet.
Yes. Is it still available?
Through the internet Wayback Machine, you can look it up and you can surf it a little bit, and which is really useful as I've started to, you know, tell my story and do, you know, all of this, so I could pull up images from it. It's hilarious because I didn't have actual Photoshop, so I'm using like Microsoft Paint to try and remove the background of a picture of Jackie Chan. And so it's just the jankiest, goofiest looking graphic of what a high schooler could do 25 years ago. And I ran it for, I don't know, a year, 6 months. I don't remember exactly. And had the little counter in the corner. And it got up to like 1,000 clicks in a year. Which I was, wow, 1,000 people looked at my Jackie Chan fan webpage. But I never stuck with it. And I kept not sticking with it. And I had, you know, I was on WordPress. I did Zanga. I did LiveJournal.
Angel Fire?
No, I didn't. Angel Fire is not one of the paths I went down. So,
oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's one of the few internet trends that I missed. But so I tried all sorts of different things throughout the years and never stuck with any of them long enough to grow an audience to even be able to imagine a 250,000 people, 250,000 people subscribed to my channel. And then about 10 years ago, I started experimenting a little bit with YouTube and, you know, posted a couple like trial videos, but didn't stick with it. Some of that is I worked at a church and it was so seasonal and I'd have a slow batch of time. And I would just go, I'd jump on YouTube and post 4 videos. And then I'd get busy 2 weeks later. And then I wouldn't post anything for 6 months. So never stuck with it, never grew, but always thought like, I've always been someone that likes at the end of the day to have created something. Something new exists because of my work today. Something meaningful. So I've always been self-motivated to create things. So that'll bring us to summer 7 years ago, 2016. And I resigned from the church I was at because I'd formed a drinking problem. And it wasn't like any like, oh, I used to party and I kept it a secret. No, it was my own toxic coping mechanism for the stress of ministry. And it's one of those things I've pondered if I, at some point in time, exploring a little bit more in written or some other form, but pastors are in a very tricky position because they're a sinner like everyone else. They're a human just like everyone else, but their job requires them to have a certain moral expectations.
Yeah, higher standard than most.
Higher standard. And so what happens when you fail? Where's the grace that you need, as every human needs grace? And I don't know that many churches have a good answer for that of, if you start going down a path, how does it not turn into, I better hide this so I keep my job? And so basically through the stress of ministry, and there's some things at the church I was at that there's just a lot going on. There's a lot of tragedy. And I have alcoholic genes. My dad actually drank himself to death and found myself in that trap. And it went on for 2.5-3 years of like really spiraling out of control of like, it was bad. And so ended up resigning summer 2016. And this, you know, obviously created chaos in my household. And tension with my wife, kids, what's my job going to be? What am I going to do? And kind of my escape to try and have something going on was to go back to that hobby from when I was in high school, from the LiveJournal days, from the WordPress days, from those experiments a few years earlier, talking movies on the internet.
That's really interesting to me because that's like a huge leap of faith to go to, especially at that time in 2016, YouTube is a thing, but I don't feel like it doesn't really explode until right before the pandemic. Everybody, mm-hmm. There's channels and stuff. So that's you, because not only to go in that route, you have to have like a certain niche,
yeah,
on YouTube or just any type of platform for social media. What was it that made you think about like, you know what, as I'm going to give this a shot, you start doing your top. You rank your films, or you rank your whatever it is that you're ranking. What was it that got you there?
Yeah, so when I first started, it was just kind of like let me just try stuff. I didn't have an audience; it didn't matter. Like, it's, let's see what happens. And so I tried movie news because I like martial arts movies. I was like, let's review Jean-Claude Van Damme films. and then I always remember, I don't even remember where this came from, but I liked seeing rankings on like movie blogs and stuff, but they always felt informal to me because it's just, it's written. There's not a face. There's not a personality. And they would be coming from these websites that are a brand. And so you think of the brand, not the person writing it. So it just felt formal. And I'd done some rankings of my own in some of my various WordPress errors and things like that. So when it came to YouTube, I was like, oh, let me just rank some of these franchises and just give it a try. And about 9 months into my channel, going into summer 2017, I just looked at the numbers. Let me do some analysis. I want this thing to grow. It's doing good. What do I need to like push it up to doing great? And I looked at it. And if I do a movie review, it gets 100 views. If I do a franchise ranking, it's 500 views. Mm. Not great at math, but one of these is more than the other. And so it's May 2017, I just went, all right, every Saturday, I'm going to post the ranking of whatever the new thing is. So there's a Transformers movie, there's Alien Covenant, there was Pirates of the Caribbean. Of course, there's always a Marvel movie coming out. And just went every week, well, whatever the new thing is, I'm going to rank it. And that worked. I started growing twice as fast. And I'm like, well, that's cool. What if I did two per week? I'll rank an old franchise that's one of my favorites, and then I'll do the new one on Saturday. And I started growing even faster when I started doing that. And did that for about 6 months and just created an archive of content that if you discovered my channel and you went, oh, I like this video. This is cool when he does this. I wonder if he's done, fill in the blank. Well, 6 months in, doing two at a time, well, it starts to be a pretty big archive. And so you can find a second one that you'd like. And then I just, I got really lucky in the fall of 2017 where my Marvel ranking when Thor Ragnarok came out got like 400,000 views, which was 20 times whatever my previous highest view video was. And that meant that
Sean Chandler talks about it's on the map.
It is now on the map. That is exactly what it meant. And so 400,000 new people discovered me. And if even just 1% liked me, just 1% liked me, and they find a second video, all of a sudden I'm adding thousands of like new fans very shortly. And then a couple months later, when Black Panther came out, I added two different videos that to this day are my most viewed long form videos on my channel. And so in a matter of a few months, I was exposed to an enormous number of people while having a back catalog. And suddenly I was the ranking guy.
Huh. You know, it's funny. We have a similar metric. We just hope like 1% of people listen ever to this radio show. So,
and we're talking the world population. I do want to backtrack though for just a second. Cause you know, in that whole process, it's growing. Life is going great for the YouTube channel. But Sean Chandler, how does his marriage get better? Does his what happens with that whole situation with your personal life with Christ?
Yeah. So basically when I resigned from the church, my thought was the problem here is that I was trying to fix myself. I was more concerned with looking holy, looking pure, looking like a pastor than being holy and pure. And it was all about maintaining control, all about secrets, my reputation. And so my thought immediately was, okay, the band-aid's coming off and I'm going to do this right. And so I went to the leadership at the church and said, okay, here's what's been going on. What do you want me to do? What is your plan for me getting healthy? My option of trying to do this myself doesn't work. I humbly submit to your leadership and your guidance. If you want us to leave, we will leave. If you want us to stay, we will stay. Whatever it is, that's what we're going to do. And they said, we want you to stay. And so we stayed, and that's where we're still at 7 years later. There have been hurdles. There have been complications. There was a window where we did leave for about 6 months after a bit of time, but then we came back.
Right there, it says a lot about your church, for one, and a lot about your guys' character on relationships with the people built there. I think it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so like... tomorrow night, I'm going to see the new Indiana Jones movie, or as of when we're recording this, tomorrow night, seeing the new Indiana Jones movie. And I'm taken to the press screening, the pastor of my church and his son. And his son was one of my students who graduated from my ministry, and there's one of my interns. And the pastor of our church actually officiated my wedding 17 years ago. He was my youth pastor back in the 90s. So we literally go back about 30 years. And even in our, you know, the journey of processing everything that went down with me and why did things get so bad. Even within the last year, we had a sit down with lots of tears of, you know, me saying some things that I probably should have said 10 years ago. And, you know, bringing some things up and him apologizing and me apologizing and, you know, both of us extending grace to the other person in the ways that we sin to each other. And that whenever I tell my story, that's one of the things that people are most shocked by. Like, wait a minute, you were a pastor, had huge moral failing, and you're still there? Yeah.
I think that's incredible. That's exactly what the church needs to be.
And I mean, I preached in big church, you know, a couple years back. Just within the last week, he asked if I can preach again this fall. And we're doing launching a big Bible study where I'll be the main teacher for like this whole thing that we're launching. And then I was driving teenagers around for the big event that we do every summer last week. And so like all the things to where it was a big concern and issues 7 years ago, like that, like the phrase that you're fully restored. Of course, you can do whatever you want because you're an active member of our church that we want you to use your gifts to serve. But I mean, it was so that's kind of the church side to it that that like they paid for any recovery programs I went to. They paid for that. They supported, you know, had enough of a severance package of sorts that we were covered until I got another job.
So refreshing to hear that, because what are we surrounded by right now? We're surrounded by documentaries of moral failings, in some cases mega churches, others shows right. from TLC, right? And right, we see right, these right. things happening, and not just those. I mean, there's all kinds of headlines over many years that do not end the way this ended, with restoration, with being welcomed back in, with you know, the story of the prodigal son, like playing out. Right. And so it's exciting to hear it from your side, but it's also sad to think about it from the other angles. Like, why don't we ever hear this story elsewhere?
And I'd say it's good to know that there's more to it. Like, if anybody listening right now, maybe this is you, you feel like, man, there's no hope for me. How do I ever get back? Well, one, it's seeking forgiveness for one, and relying on God's grace the second. And then three, time. Yeah. It takes time for right. healing.
And that's the person that's struggling. But I think a part of this story, Sean, is also on the other side, again, where we see these stories of the church almost leaving somebody out to dry because they messed up and we're like, sorry, you're out. You're a bad person. But a place where we can actually restore. I mean, there's a process. There's, of course, an appropriate measure depending on what's going on. But to still be there and restore. I mean, the Bible talks a lot about that sort of thing, about restoring each other and being there for each other. Well, Sean, I want to shift a little bit, because you said something through your story about going like with your pastor or pastor's son to the movies. And like we said towards the beginning, movies seem to be, I don't know, all over the map when it comes to church and faith. And there is...
stigma?
Yeah, I think stigma is the right word sometimes. And maybe some of that's trickled down from the type of churches that I grew up in. I was around a much more conservative sort of thing. And there was a time where the loudest voices in the church were all proclaiming the evils of Hollywood, right? And so if Hollywood is evil, movies are evil. And so, Sean, are movies evil? That's what we want to know.
Of course they are. That's Hollyweird creates them, so of course they're evil.
Yeah.
I think some of that's funny, the way that just people invent new sins. There's not as if there's not enough rules in the Bible. There's not enough like that we have to like invent new ways that people can be in the wrong. Come on now, like this is hard enough as it is.
Yeah, it's funny, but I think that a lot of that bleeds over, because we know there are some movies that you look at them and even from an objective standpoint, we're like, yeah, that's probably not good content. And so it's this whole, you know, let's throw it all out rather than it's a different standard. We don't give this standard, at least within the church, I should say. It seems like certain art forms are given more of a pass maybe than movies are. In movies, oftentimes it's like, well, we know there's some bad stuff, so let's just stay away from all of that. Where do you fall on that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think to that point, there's something very strange about the way that we kind of treat media. Like, if I went to public school. Public school gets really crass by the sixth grade. I'm very aware of this because my son is going into the sixth grade. And just thinking of all the things I know he's going to be exposed to that I can't protect him from. Every workplace that's not a church, and even some workplaces that are churches, are so crass. And you can't protect yourself from all of that. But and then people act as if the mildest of things in movies is like, what? But these three words are in that movie. Like, have you met your coworkers? Like, what are you really? Like,
have you stepped outside your door?
Yeah, I don't understand quite where you're going from. And maybe it some of it's because of the context where I grew up. It was a very interesting household where my mom is like a classic church lady, where she just retired within the last 6 months. But prior to that, for over 20 years, she'd worked at her church and has always been heavily plugged in as a volunteer. And then my dad was a crass alcoholic that claimed to be an atheist and spent his time in the bar. And his nickname for me was S-word head. So, you know, it makes for a context to where you know something's aren't right, but you're also kind of, my tolerance like for bad language is pretty strong because that's just what my dad called me. So I didn't think much about it. I think when it comes to an individual, you have to know yourself and what you're sensitive to, what moves you towards God, what moves you away from God, what pushes you towards your worst tendencies and what doesn't.
Have you, in the movies that you watch, because you're going to review films all the time, that's what you do now, and you rank them. Is there ever a film that you decide, you know what, I'm not going to do? Like I was leading our college ministry at the time, young adults, and the movie Sin City came out. I'm like, yeah, guys, we'll go. We know what it's about. It says Sin City. And then we were there, like halfway through, it was like, all right, I got to be a responsible guy. I got to take some of these guys out of here because I knew that we shouldn't have been in that. But is there a line where you're like, you know, I'm not going to do that one?
I think the thing for me, the genre that I've discovered is just definitely not for me, is the party genre, where it's about a bunch of high schoolers trying to get to the party where they're going to do drugs in each other.
Yeah.
And having worked with teenagers since basically I stopped being a teenager, it's so much of about trying to get them to make wise choices. And then there's a whole subgenre of Hollywood celebrating high schoolers doing drugs, getting drunk, drinking underage, and then in that context where they're inebriated, carelessly just hooking up with each other, which even based off their own modern standards, is there would be wildly opposed to it because they're intoxicated and can't consent. And so it's a genre that, oh, this movie's so funny. Oh, but it's really heartfelt too. And every time I watch those movies, I just watch them and like, I can't endorse any of this. It makes me feel uncomfortable. The idea that Hollywood's like obsession with the sexuality of children, because high schoolers are children, is freaking weird. Yeah. And like the actors are technically 18 or older. Right, but they're playing 17-year-olds. That's freaking weird. And so that's always been a genre that I've skipped a lot of those movies, or kind of intentionally, maybe I watched it, but like didn't really review it, even if I did, because I just, I'm not looking to review the morality of the film. And that's kind of what it would turn into with a lot of times with some of these.
Sean Chandler talks about, you can't watch this movie.
Right. Here's why you're evil if you watch this. If you laughed at this, how dare you, you sicko? That's my new direction. I'm going to go with the Sean Chandler condemns you personally. Right.
You and your choices.
You're condemned.
Your terrible choices. Well, I mean, if we're going to take, though, some of the maybe the biblical approach to it, I think, because on one side, people will point to all the, I don't know, commandments, says don't do that, those things. Like, okay, we get that, but that's, what is the story? What is the movie? Because on the other side, biblically, it also talks about freedoms, you know, and the do not call unclean what I have called clean. And this is where you kind of get into that territory that people like to argue about. But, you know, for you, like for the journey you've been through with alcoholism and stuff, you know, somebody else, their decision whether or not they're going to have a glass of wine may not be inherently wrong, but it might depend on that situation, right? So they may not, it's probably not a great idea to take someone who has struggled with that to join them as opposed to somebody else. And I feel like there's a, we don't extend that, at least sometimes in the church doesn't extend that to movies.
Right.
There are things like you're talking about that are objectively not okay. But there are other things that were like, well, you know, maybe for me, this is something within reason that I feel like is okay. Or on the other side, for whatever my upbringing is or my childhood, this is going to be triggering to me. I know what this does in my brain. I know how I react to this. So I know I need to stay away. And everybody is wired differently. Mm-hmm. And so that may fluctuate, I think, person to person.
Yeah, and I think just even a lot, like, everyone wants to turn everything into a nice, easy, clean set of rules.
Yes.
Because they're clean, easy, and objective. And what you get are a lot of principles in the Bible because it's meant to be for all people at all times. Mm-hmm. And if you even stop and think about some of the standards people set for movies, well, you can't watch violence. Well, you can't watch sex. You can't watch people, you know, indulge in debauchery. Well, read the book of a... You know, read some of these books of the Bible. Like, this is a common theme, right? It's right there. It's an instruction manual. You know, look at how many of the like legends of faith in the Bible, the Mount Rushmore of faith in the Bible. How many of them had affairs? How many of them did really bad stuff? How many of them were involved in murder? And then you get into the, you know, book of Judges and like, whoa, this gets pretty wild. There's so much, not just R, like NC-17 content in the Bible. And so the question is, okay, what's in the Bible? It's okay because it's modeling something. We can learn from the examples of people's sin. Okay, well, you can also learn those examples from fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's making a hard set rule. You can't indulge in something that has this in it. Okay. So I can't read which books of the Bible do you want me to stop reading? Like that's it. If you make a hard rule, that's immediately what happens. And if your rule makes it so that you can't read the Bible, there's something wrong with your rule because you've added to what's actually in the Bible, which are principles.
And I think maybe a part of it is something you touched on is, again, talking about like the raunchy comedies or whatever. So there might be topical things or questionable things, but in what context are they being celebrated? Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, like terrible thing moving the story and we learn something from that or the character learns something from that? Or is it, you know, the goal of the movie is to get away with that thing?
Right.
and
that's
a big difference.
That's very much a big part of why I struggle with particularly teenage raunchy comedies, where they actually do have an overt sexual morality idea of behavior that they're celebrating, which especially post hashtag Me Too and all of that, like we've realized this is a really bad morality. This is a bad way to live that has horrible consequences. And everyone knows it. Everyone agrees with that. But they're still putting out these movies from time to time.
They still make them.
That, like, because it's funny. When people behaving badly, it's funny. But they're celebrating and romanticizing literally the context where date rape are normal.
Yeah.
Now, I want to bring it back a little bit. Maybe people are listening right now thinking, okay, you guys, I hear you here, but Sean Chandler talks about what are his favorite kind of movies? What are the films? What kind of credibility does this guy really have? go ahead. And I know recently you had put out a video with your top 10. I'm curious because with the top 10 you put out, none of them are current. They're a little bit older, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with. But go ahead and list some of those off for folks.
Yeah, my favorite movies are all the big gigantic hits from right before and then my formative early years. When it comes to the top 10, I think the most recent one is from 1991. So it's like the most My list of favorites, it's intentionally the ones that have been with me for 30 years, that I still love them, that are just classics you can put on any time and just have a blast with them. By no means am I claiming these are the best movies of all time, but every single person my age, it's like the list that they love. So Rocky, Terminator 2, Die Hard, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park. Oh, I guess Jurassic Park is from a few years after that. So 93, okay. 30 years back is where we're going for all of these. Empire Strikes Back. So anyway, those are the ones that I mean. Yeah. But movies that everyone goes, yeah, those are great, highly entertaining films. It's definitely not a pretentious list. It's blockbusters. But
yes,
man, they're great movies.
I you said Die Hard, and I love that film because of my, I'll never forget it. It's 1988. My parents have their wedding anniversary. It's in August, and they go see that movie. So if people realize Die Hard's a Christmas film, but it's
right.
It came out in August. I remember when my dad came back, he's like, guys, I have to take you to the movies. And we were not allowed to watch R-rated films at all.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is the only time this will ever happen in your life, period. But he opened up a window for me to see this kind of film. That's like, I want to watch movies like this from here on out.
Right.
Die Hard is great.
Well, and that's an interesting point, too. I was in the same type of household. I mean, it was the hard rules like you're talking about, Sean. It was... You know, R-rated equals bad movie. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, a lot of that, like the question marks started coming up and, it, you know, like Passion of the Christ. Now people were having to engage.
Right.
Like maybe it's not about a rating anymore. But again, the nice,
even
tidy
thinking
rule.
About like the concept of like, well, you can't watch rated R movies. You're surrendering your moral standards to a secular organization. Like how crazy that is.
That's a good way to put it.
That's really interesting. But you brought up Jackie Chan. I remember Jackie Chan puts out Super Cop, let alone Rumble in the Bronx. Both were rated R.
Yes.
In America, but if you watch it, no way is that a rated R
film. I've shown my kids those movies because of that whole rating weirdness, because it's
coming from another country.
It's like a PG movie in many respects.
They're like not even violent because it's like he's like hitting them with refrigerators and stuff rather than like clubbing them. So it's intentionally funny.
Yeah. Well, Sean, let's go a different direction here because we've kind of covered about some of those things like where do we fall or is it legalistic or is it bad? Or let's talk about Christian movies for a moment. Yeah. Now, Aaron and I both have grown up around church our whole lives, and so we were around a lot of the early Christian films and things, and we're in Christian radio now, so when they come out, we're usually involved, promotion or something like that. So we'll say they've shifted a lot, but when you kind of look at Christian movies, like what's coming to your mind?
I mean...
Which I'll, by the way, say, you have not done a ranking... So I think this is one you should do.
Yeah, yes.
So what comes to mind? Sermon illustrations with a theatrical length runtime.
that's pretty good, man. Yes.
Well, that was... there's obviously a lot of them, and they fall into different categories.
Yeah.
But... and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, and... in a lot of ways, I haven't seen a lot of the ones that I would pick on if I were to start listing names. And so I that's particularly why I don't want to do anything like that.
I don't think you'll offend anybody.
But I'll throw this one out because it's been long enough. But like, I just remember people describing the movie Fireproof to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I haven't seen it. And there are people like, oh, it's so good. It really helped me through something. And I don't want to take that away from anyone. If God uses Fireproof Kirk Cameron to like save your marriage and get you off porn, awesome. But then when they like describe the movie to me and then he does this and this happens, they're like, well, that's just a sermon illustration with a runtime. Like that's,
yeah.
And then, I think some of the ones that really played weird to me was the first God's Not Dead. The plot synopsis of it was an email forward that went around forever. Like back in the 2005, there's the evil email forward that everybody sent out about the evil secularizing professor and there's like this kid in class. The professor's talking about evolution and just roasting Christianity, and then the student owns the evil secularizing professor with these like simplistic arguments, and then at the end of it, depending on which version of the email you read, it would be like, his name, Albert Einstein. You know, you know, famous theologian Albert Einstein. It's like, what are you, Albert Einstein? What are you talking about? This is obviously fake.
Did you see the movie God's Not Dead?
I believe I've seen.
We've seen them all.
I have not seen them all.
I've seen them all. Reluctantly.
I don't know that I've watched it or if I've just watched enough videos about it. I have a very good idea of exactly what happens in God's Not Dead.
This is a great example for that film because I've always wondered, and this is maybe it's not this podcast for this whole movie, but spoiler, the professor dies in the movie.
Yeah.
And it made no sense to me.
Yeah.
This is the person they're supposed to be leading Christ to, and it does the opposite.
And not only that, this is what really got me about the film. And I know there's probably some people out there who, you know, listen to our show that's a fan of the movie. But not only does the quote unquote bad like atheist professor die, after that they just go to a Newsboys concert.
right. You know? Right.
And it was just like this really feels
it made no
wrong.
Sense.
Yeah.
Saying it out loud just now. Yeah. I have tons of respect for the Newsboys. I just lost some right there. Sorry, Michael and Adam. Sorry, guys.
I mean, we've seen some quality that has gone up for sure. We've seen, and I forget who it was, Aaron. I don't remember if you were there. We had at one of these broadcasting conferences we went to, I think it was one of the Kendrick brothers, was on stage.
Yeah,
and I did, this grew on me. I appreciate it. He said, listen, I don't know what the movie at the time that was coming out, but he's like, we know we're not the best at what we do, but we feel like we have this vision and we're doing the best we can. And our hope is by doing this, we are going to have somebody else that can do it way better than us to get in on it and start doing that. They're like, we want to be outperformed. We want to inspire others. And for me, I guess when I heard that, because I tend to be cynical just in general, but that grounded me a little bit. Like, okay, you know, like they're really trying, and they're really trying to make a difference. And sometimes the end result, it's easy to poke at, but, you know, it's better, I think, that we grow it and improve it. I don't know that we're there.
Right?
Have you, Sean, ever seen any Christian movie that you thought was good?
So like they did a Case for Christ movie, how does that work? Because that is a book of a guy interviewing people. Like great documentary, but how do you make that a narrative film? And so then they picked the path that as soon as they said what it was, you go, oh, that makes sense. It's Lee Strobel's story, which that's where Case for Christ came from, was this investigative journalist is an atheist, decides to research the Case for Christ, and then through that realizes the truth to it and finds Jesus. And so then they make a movie about a person and his story, his journey. So it built into it, there's opportunity for more just stating things, because he is investigating it. So there's a couple times where it's heavy-handed, but it fits in the narrative being communicated.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it instead of trying to preach at the audience, instead of having a moment in the movie where someone goes to a pastor or the old wiser man shows up and like states the message of the movie, the gospel. Like, I know your marriage is broken. What you really need is Jesus. What you need to understand is all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But for God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son, whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Like it doesn't do that. Like it just plays out like a guy's actual life as he's slowly discovering, wait, I have faith in this. And it doesn't preach at the audience. And that's like on my channel, I don't like any movie that preaches at the audience. So there's one of these raunchy sex comedies we were talking about called Blockers. There's a point in time where like a lady stands up on a box and literally preaches her sex positive view on morality. And I'm like, what? This is a raunchy comedy that's preaching at me. What is this? Like, how ridiculous has Hollywood turned? Like, what is this? But that, you know, that, like, there's, you know, segments in She-Hulk from last year from Marvel where, like, She-Hulk starts lecturing Hulk on bad men behavior and why women have it hard. And, like, you're preaching at the audience. What are you doing? And that's what, like, such a high percentage of Christian movies do, is at some point in time, it pauses for the writer of the film and the director to have a character directly address the audience and just state what they want them to learn. Whatever your genre, stop doing that. Have it communicated through story, through character development.
I think that's, it's like the most, I feel like that basic thing, anyone that maybe even took any sort of introductory class to storytelling or writing, it's show it, don't tell it. And even, okay, so let's talk about what Jesus did. He told stories. And sometimes at the end of the story, which wasn't about, and then they accepted me.
He left you with the question at the end.
Yeah, and sometimes at the end, the disciples are having a discussion. They're trying to figure it out. They don't always even understand. But it was a narrative. It was the brilliant storytelling of Jesus. And that's what he was using to teach. And for some reason, we do often, it seems like the industry has this idea that, no, we can't do that because people won't figure it out. Let's have the whole monologue where the wise old pastor turns to the camera. You see, folks, you know?
Right.
Well, as we, I'm curious, as before we get ready to close on this thing, I want to, coming up, this is a big year. Is there a movie that you're looking forward to on reviewing, seeing what you want your kids? Is there something you want your kids to watch they haven't seen yet?
Trying to think, because every year they get older, there's a new batch of movies we're thinking, oh, can I show this to them? But with the new Indiana Jones coming out, really tried to show them the old Indiana Jones movies, and it didn't work. They didn't. Wow. They weren't into it.
Really?
It was the most heartbreaking moment of my entire life. That's
wow.
That was just right there, like, oh, my kids don't like Indiana Jones. It was weird, and I'm not sure what it was, why specifically they didn't connect with it, but for whatever reason, they just weren't feeling it. So for them, I don't know that I have one on the radar anymore, because there were several that we were excited about. But for me, I mean, you got new Mission Impossible next month, new Christopher Nolan movie Oppenheimer coming up, and then there's an original sci-fi film called The Creator coming out in about 3 months. It's from the director of Rogue One.
Yes, and I saw this. This looks great.
And Disney, Fox, whatever, with the studios, actually gave someone a bunch of money to tell an original sci-fi story. So that's the movie. Like, anytime someone asks me, what's something coming up when you should get on my radar? That's the one I always want to talk about, because I don't need to promote, you know, the new Mission Impossible movie. You know, we all know what that is and we're excited for it. All the comic book movies, we know what they are, and there's plenty of them. But an original sci-fi movie with a big budget from a director that's done some cool stuff in the past, sign me up, and hopefully I can sign a bunch of other people up for that.
Original storytelling. I mean, who would have guessed, right? Yeah. Well, Sean, I want to just squeeze one more thing in here, because as we said at the beginning, I mean, you talk movies for a living, but we do music for a living, and you have been around it. I want to hear a little bit about the band you were in back in the day.
So, I mean, never had any success that kind of went anywhere. But essentially, I was in multiple versions of ska punk bands, was the primary ones that I was in. So,
that's awesome.
original rendition was the Amazing Skosmonauts.
Yes.
And so, first rendition... First concerts we ever, I mean, we were terrible. This is before before any of us understood the idea of keys. And so, like, our first song, the verses were in, the verses were in E and the chorus was in F, or the other way around. One of them was in F and one of them was in E. And so there was like this hard cut transition between the verses and the chorus. Eventually we got better and we're like, wait a minute. the whole song needs to use the same set of chords. Wait, and when you do that, you don't have to do these hard stop things. Oh, this is really cool. And so then had some other versions adapted into a band called Casual Friday for a little bit, where we actually started playing some shows around Austin and some different things like that, and recorded some stuff in the studio. But it was also similar, like we didn't know how to record in a studio, so it was like kind of a total waste, but also like I can say I did that, but also was like the thing that caused us to break up, because it was like, oh, we're terrible at that, we don't know what we're doing that sort of thing. And then we came back and we did brought the Amazing Scosmonauts back as just a recording project, when we actually learned about chords and learned about recording, and I'd gotten like Cubase on my computer, and I had the Antares Auto-Tune app. Like, this is incredible. And so moved us into the year 2006, and that's where we started recording some stuff that was like, I actually really like this. And we were going to do a follow-up under then a different name, but still kind of essentially this follow-up, same group of people, called Lake City Divide. And we'd recorded a whole album of stuff, and I'd spent 6 months mixing it. And then my apartment got broken into, and they stole the computer with everything.
Oh, no.
And so I had the mixes that we'd done thus far. And some of them were basically done, but then a lot of them weren't, and it was just so demoralizing. I never finished it. We never really released it. And so some stuff that, I mean, it's niche in a sense, but I think we did a good job at this niche.
So somebody out there is running around with
the Scosmonauts.
The full length, that Streets of Ulysses. It was like an adaptation of the Odyssey about a ska band on the road, and it was like so unbelievably over the top in our ambitions, but in the most delightful ways. And it was like a blend of punk, ska, synth, shouting, all of it kind of blended together. And then we had like three or four different songs that like crescendoed into the fourth song, where we did like the main melodies of all of them in this one. And it was all this incredible stuff. It was our magnum opus. And three people on planet Earth have heard it. And I've played in church youth bands since 2002. Basically, since I got out of youth group, I started playing in church youth bands. And only one time, literally one time, one song on one Sunday, they had me sing in big church. One day, I got promoted to big church. And even within the last 3 weeks, I was at a meeting with the church's youth pastor and someone else. And they're like, hey, maybe you could start the youth band back up. Like, 20 years in, I'm still the youth band guy. Legitimately, that's my legacy as a musician, is the number of my former students that are worship pastors. The percentage of my former students that were in my youth bands that have gone on to be in full-time ministry or are high-level volunteers in worship bands is really, really high.
And so, that's cool. What's great about that, Sean, is the fact that it still showed, even from the fall from grace, the grace that God's given you, again, he shows that even through that, it's producing fruit left and right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just got to take a step back, and you can see it right there.
And we don't want you to fall into the same place as Steven Seagal and his blues band. So,
exactly.
Well, man, we appreciate Sean Chandler. Thank you for being with us. If anybody, by the way, wants to check out the channel, and please do. In fact, not only can you get all the rankings and tons of content, some of the testimony that Sean shared earlier is also there. You can hear more of his story and find it at Sean Chandler Talks About. Also, there is Sean Chandler Plus. You can find him on all the social media channels. Man, we just appreciate you taking all this time to be nerdy with us and talk movies.
It was fun, especially because you asked me about my music days. So realized I had more stories I wanted to tell than I realized.
When that ska shows up on your channel, we're taking full credit for it.
There you go.
And to anybody listening, once again, thank you for being here. Consider It Joy is a production of 88.3 Life FM out of Bakersfield, California. Listen to us every weekday, actually, in the 88.3 Life FM app. You can also find all the ways to listen and connect at ConsiderItJoyPodcast.com. Thank you for subscribing and for listening.